Hi, my name is Gunnar Froh and I'm your host on the Wunder Mobility podcast. Welcome back to the Wunder Mobility podcast. Today, my guest is Olivier Repair, CEO of ShareNow. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us, Olivier. You're welcome. One of the people who probably know most in the industry about car sharing. You are CEO of ShareNow right now, previously CEO of Car2Go, and then have been, if my numbers are correct, at Daimler for about 14 years in total.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You are well informed. Great.
how did you first get into this industry? What did it look like then? And how did it evolve, car sharing?
It was really interesting. Joining Daimler in 1998 and being part of, I would say, the management of a big automotive company was really interesting. And I learned a lot from Daimler. And being at Smart once before joining Car2Go, it has been really interesting to be part of the team taking care about the urban mobility, because the Smart, the perfect urban car, was built up especially for the urban mobility purposes. It has been really interesting to push also the electrification of the Smart car. And it was quite logic end of 2016, when I was asked to join as the CEO of Car2Go, to take up that challenge and to go for it, I would say.
Car2Go was a pioneer in free-floating car sharing back in the days. Car sharing basically existed for a long time, I think, as a kind of local initiative in many cases, maybe kind of driven from an environmental point of view and like by local, maybe even non-profits. And then Car2Go, I believe, was one of the first to pilot a free-floating setup and then went on to an expansion course. Also, for some reason that I don't understand, maybe you can like tell us, maybe you know why that happened. Also, very early on to Austin, to the US. So first there was Ulm and Austin, and then quickly expanded into a number of other cities. How did this sort of transatlantic setup come about in the beginning?
It was really interesting to see with what high motivation at Car2Go, the guys creating Car2Go, creating the concept behind Car2Go, but also building up the whole, I would say, tech infrastructure around Car2Go to enable free-floating car sharing, because nothing was available on the market, means it has been built up from the scratch for Car2Go. And yes, it's true, they always had a look into an international expansion. They started, as you mentioned, in Ulm, Stuttgart, Austin. It was fascinating to see that free-floating car sharing was also really well accepted in North America, to be honest. Not only the US, also Canada. And the expansion plan was really challenging on the Car2Go side. And I think it was really, really important for car sharing in total to prove that car sharing is something who can be really attractive for people in the urban area. And I think Car2Go has done, I would say, a pioneer work on that. It was for the whole car sharing industry today, I would say, the door opener.
What's been the evolution since then? Because we're coming from more station-based, driven by non-profits, sort of distributed car sharing initiatives, but kind of like a fringe phenomenon, to now Car2Go and others, but Car2Go leading, bringing the model into cities around the world, a free-flowing, floating setup. But what would you say has changed in the outlook for free-floating car sharing over the years? Do you think those early predictions have held true, or has there been some sort of adjustment in how big the market really is?
From my point of view, it was a never-ending development and improvement of the whole ecosystem. What do I mean with that? I remember Car2Go with opening times, I would say 8-10 seconds, you know, on the technological side, the how to talk with the car, telematic, also talking with Daimler in that time, how we can improve, I would say, all the modules within the car to have a faster opening time, but also talking about the back end. Some years ago, we talked about having a monolith as a tech infrastructure. Today, everything is with microservices, more than 200 microservices who have to work perfectly together. But also concerning the customer experience, how to communicate via the app with the customer. If you look at the app 10 years ago, if you look at the app today, I think it's a very impressive development we have made also on that layer, how to be really relevant for the customer, how to present the product, how to give new use cases to the customers. From my point of view, it's still in a strong evolution and never ended. And this is the fascinating part of the business, I would say.
If we map out sort of user growth for station-based car sharing over time, I think it would span several decades and be, yeah, probably exponential, but like slow growing. And then free-floating car sharing started much later, went much higher. But then two-wheelers, kick scooter sharing started even much later and then quickly went even much higher, lower, yeah, kind of smaller devices in the last 2 years very quickly. You started out with this kind of form factor of a car, and recently you opened up to also other brands, which was, I think, like maybe unexpected, being owned by Daimler and BMW, to bring also the Fiat 500 and other brands now into the service. But where do you see Share Now evolving as a vehicle sharing provider? And you mentioned the tech investment that you've also made basically along the way into your own software and maybe also own hardware components. I'm not 100% sure, but
yeah,
I think on both sides. Are you going to use that existing infrastructure to also grow into other vehicle types, or where do you see car sharing and light electric vehicle sharing basically merging or not merging?
Yeah, from our point of view, there is still a long way for improvement on the free-floating car sharing. And it's not only about short-term trips. It's also about what we name long-term car sharing, with offering trips up to 30 days to address perfectly, I would say, that product to the customers, and to be a highly relevant player in that area. For us, it's very interesting to see how we can combine, I would say, the Share Now operational part with the Share Now tech part, and to work really, really hand in hand and developing our completely own ecosystem and offering that to our customers. We have been really happy to see how open BMW and Daimler have been when we suggested also to take third-party vehicle in our fleet, like the Fiat 500 we took with the combustion car, but also with the fully electric Fiat 500 we just launched last week in Amsterdam. There are a lot of opportunities in I would say the car ecosystem we see, and we further see also in the future. And our tech environment gives us a lot of options and opportunities. We also have two franchise partners. We can also offer, I would say, this franchise aspect of providing the tech support to provide free-floating car sharing in cities where we are not, I would say, owning the operations, but supporting the operations with all the tools and offering an appealing product to franchise partners. This is also, for us, a very important area where we can further grow in our plans. Yeah.
It's very interesting. So if I understand correctly, you say focus on the car ecosystem. For example, think about long-term car rental. It's not just the minute-based, and the investment you've made into integration of your operational part and tech part allowed you to have a very good product that you now also franchise to others. Publicly listed at the moment, I believe, are about 16 cities that Share Now is operating in. And when you mention franchise partners, are those people running under your brand in some of these 16 cities, or more under their own brands in other places?
Yes, we are talking, to be very clear, we are talking about Copenhagen and Budapest. These are the two franchise cities within our portfolio. And they are running the Share Now fleet under their own responsibility. Yeah? We are providing the application. We are providing the, I would say, the operational support from a tool perspective. But the fleet is owned by these franchise partners in Copenhagen and Budapest. Yeah, to clarify that. Yeah,
I think that if I read it correctly at the time, that's been the setup for a while, right? Like maybe even from the launch some years ago in Copenhagen. It seems like a very kind of timely model in a way, that kind of asset light franchise model where you basically provide a platform, maybe even deals to some extent on vehicles, but somehow in the end aren't the owner and the operator of this setup. Do you think that's something that that you will do more of in the future?
Yes, we would like to, because we don't see, I would say, the necessity to be in every single city. We know that if you take the example of Copenhagen, was really, really a successful city with this franchise concept. We know how important the local knowledge is also to be successful, to acquire new customers and to have this local knowledge to improve very fast the figures and be successful with free floating car sharing. We see the franchise concept as a future-oriented solution to further grow. And we know that the customers from Copenhagen, they like the advantage or the aspect that they can also use our service in all the other cities without having any new registration or something like that. They are free to use the service, not only in Copenhagen, but in all other 15 cities in our portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's really appealing. And we know that this is a part of very important assets in our ecosystem now.
What would drive that decision for you to either launch a city yourself or go with a franchise partner?
Especially what I mentioned about the local knowledge, about what is exact, identifying the local needs and being able to be faster in the ramp up, I would say, not only to start the operation, but in the ramp up from a customer perspective, but also from all the KPIs, from all the operational KPIs. Yeah? We see some advantages with this franchise approach, because we know starting as the first player in a city is not easy for free-floating car sharing. You have to provide a decent amount of cars. You have no customer at the starting point. You need to ramp up the customer quite fast in order to have the utilization you need to have, yeah, and not burning too much money in the first years, because yeah, it's not a surprise in the first years of doing car sharing in a city where you start your operations. It's first of all a cash burn you have to take into account. Yeah? This is a clear situation, and if you can reduce that time of the cash burning time for a new city, that's really attractive, and the franchise option with the local knowledge is definitively an option.
Now that you've seen both models work, would you launch any cities of your own anymore, or is franchise sort of the default way to go?
Yeah, the last big city we started is Paris, yeah, big capital. That's always very interesting to be in ourselves, yeah, and to start the operations there. It's also a fully electric city in Paris. We had a strong relationship with the city of Paris, because we had been in discussion how to improve also the quality of life in Paris. What are the concept for the future of mobility in Paris? It's very interesting to see what a local government like the team of Anne Hidalgo are doing to improve the whole, I would say, mess up in Paris with traffic jam and so on, who are still in place, but the solutions are there and the solutions are pushed from the city. And for us, it was really, really important to be an active part of this solution for the city of Paris. Yeah.
You mentioned they require an all-electric fleet, so the initial investment is even higher. But then also it sounds like it's a very important showcase in their existing relationships. So maybe almost too important to risk anything, maybe to give to a franchise partner from that perspective, or that also drive sort of the decision whether it's a very strategic city, then it should be your own operations. But if it's more a tier two city, maybe then like they might as well go through franchises?
It was clear for us from a strategy point of view that we want to do Paris. It was also the last car to go city we launched in with Paris. It was clear from the beginning on, if we have the chance to start an operation in Paris, we would do that. We knew about the infrastructure because of the previous player in place. We knew about the high motivation of Annie Hidalgo's team to have some new actors in Paris, some successful actors in Paris. And for us, it was clear from a strategic point of view that we need to be directly ourselves in Paris doing that business. Yeah.
Where do you think innovation will happen in vehicle sharing, or specifically in car sharing, in the near future? Maybe in terms of business model, or also user experience or technology that's used to connect to the vehicles. Is there an area where you think, okay, it's been kind of the same for a long time, but there must be something more coming? Because it seems like the evolution is very gradual by now. It seems like more brands are coming onto the market and everything gets gradually improved. But what's the, let's say, game changer, if not the form factor of just a different type of vehicle?
But first of all, I think what's really interesting to see is how all the tools related to, I would say, machine learning, artificial intelligence, optimizing of the operations, what the improvement the last years in our BI team, our business intelligence team, what we have been able to improve from an operational point of view, thanks to the new tools we developed in-house. It was really impressive to see that. Yes, we expected somehow that there would be a way or a fast lane for autonomous vehicles. It looks like it's more challenging than expected, also for the car manufacturer. Yeah, but from a long-term perspective, I think there is a huge improvement for the free-floating car-sharing business as soon as cars are fully autonomous. It's really interesting also for us to see what happens with companies like Velocopter and Air Mobility. It's really exciting to see what will happen there. I think there are on the technological side, there are a lot of revolutions in the future, and this will really help us also on the operational side. We know from our simulation that with fully autonomous cars, we would be able to do the same business with half of the fleet. Yeah, and this is a game changer, would be a game changer. But we also know that for the autonomous industry, or from the autonomous point of view, the urban area is the most challenging one. And this is also the reality they are facing with the development of all the aspects they need to have fully autonomous cars. But once it will happen, and then we will also have on the operational side a big game changer with fully autonomous vehicle, from my point of view.
Mm-hmm. When you say recently your BI team deployed AI for tools that they've developed for your own operations, what's kind of the order of magnitude of improvements that you're able to see? And do you target those towards higher service levels, sort of matching supply and demand, or mainly towards driving down operations costs? Because that's still presumably the main struggle as an operator, to be able to provision cars and not have to service cars so much, basically.
Yes, at least it's both. Yeah? On the one hand, you really want to be at the right time, on at the right moment, at the right place with your cars, with all the prediction tools and the dynamic you have related to a lot of factors concerning the peak times of the utilization, or weather situation, or because some certain events happens in the city. You want to be, I would say, available for the customers on the one hand, but from an operational perspective, we also want to be as good as possible concerning the frequency of cleaning, to understand when we have to do what in a bundle wave per car. And the combination of all these, I would say, aspects or parameters who influences also the cost perspective or your P&L, and to optimize this operational ecosystem is a never-ending challenge, I would say. And this is fascinating also to see what we can put out of new tools, what we can learn from city to city, because every city has its own behavior, I would say, from a mobility perspective, and being able to adapt in the back end these BI tools in order to steer every city on the highest possible professional level. This is not a home run. We are really happy having that in-house, honestly speaking, and being able also to invest, I would say, on that part of the business for us.
Like, what's an order of magnitude for how much improvements are still possible in this area? If you say, for example, like operations cost, I don't know how that's expressed internally, but maybe, for example, per trip or so, whatever goes into cleaning, charging, repositioning, like per trip, how much does that even go down still from year to year? Are we probably talking like smaller single digit, percentage efficiency improvements, or have you seen larger gains? And can you share some of what was driving those, how that was possible?
When we enter, for example, the long-term car sharing area, we also offer to our customer the pre-booking. Mm-hmm. And with this pre-booking, you also have certain options you can choose, getting a fully fueled car, fully cleaned, with everything, mm-hmm. all in, I would say. Mm-hmm. And but this is something you have to manage when there are some high demand moments, like now for the Eastern holiday time, where there is a high demand for this kind of product. You want to understand how to pick out of your free-floating car sharing fleet the cars at the right moment in order to have them in time ready for the customer who booked or pre-booked that car. And the optimization potential there is still, from my point of view, a two-digit one. Yeah, because you start being on the safe side, you know, providing the car reserved with a lead time, I would say, was quite big in order mm-hmm. to be able to manage the volume and to understand peu à peu what kind of improvement you can do. But with the support of the adapted BI tools, also adapt to the long-term car sharing, gaining efficiency with these new use cases or offering these new cases is really interesting, but still a good way of improvement possible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you are speaking about the long-term car rental and like provisioning these cars and so on, you are basically meshing two businesses that used to be very separate, I think maybe until maybe a year ago or so, not very long ago. Mm-hmm. It was either daily rental or minute-based car sharing. Those fleets were also separated. And what's happening now to basically car rental and eventually car dealership? Do you see those free-floating vehicle providers or operators as the future entry gates towards rental and then subscription as an alternative to ownership, basically? So the idea that I go to, you know, a Six station or a Daimler dealership to sign a contract and so on and interact with a person, basically go away because the inventory is somehow distributed in the streets and I might take this car by the minute, but I might as well also keep it for a few months and the end result might be similar to what would have been a leasing term. Yeah. Do you see this basically free-floating car sharing as the front end, the sort of future front end towards car ownership, or do you think that's somehow wrong, that doesn't make sense, that's misguided?
To be very clear, our purpose, and everyone actually know this purpose and know this is what you need to believe in order to really be a part of the Chernow family, is that we really believe in sharing more and owning less, and to make our cities more livable. This is our target. And if you really want to achieve that, it's important to offer all possible use cases, to give no excuses to customers or to potential customers why they should stick to their own car. And mm-hmm. this was the reason why, from our perspective, it was really important to go into the longer use cases, the long-term car sharing, to enable our customers also, if they want to have one of these cars to go to holiday or whatever, only spending a weekend at the Ostsee, for example, that there is no excuse because, you know, using cars is a very emotional topic, and you do not need to own that car to feel some positive emotion while using a car. You do not need to be the owner of that car. You can use a sharing car. But if you are thinking about getting rid of your car, I think you always have a good excuse not to do that. And we want to reduce the amount of excuses. And especially in the urban area where we know exactly that the cars are on street parking most of the time, more than 90% of the time. We are also looking into what does it mean about, is there really high demand or need concerning the auto abo? We see a lot of players there. We are still concentrated on our car sharing offering from short term to long term. But it's interesting to see, is there really high demand for auto abo, or with all the players around us doing car sharing in different ways, is there enough answer to your needs for mobility? And you mentioned it, I think, 10 minutes, 20 minutes ago. If you look at all the mobility portfolio who you can use in a city like Berlin, Munich, Hamburg, it's only some examples. One day you use your bicycle, the next day you use a car sharing car, then you use a scooter, whatever. This is freedom. This is a real mobility freedom you have in front of you and you can use. And that's, I think, the right answer in the urban area. We have no claim like, please only use free-floating car sharing in order to go from A to B in a city. Not at all. Please use all the nice options you have around you, and that will make you quite happy about the freedom using one day a nice scooter and the next day using a bicycle, for example. Yeah.
Yeah.
This, from my point of view, the highest level of freedom you can have. Yeah.
While it is freedom on the surface to have all these vehicles standing there and the offering is like really growing the whole time, and it's like quite a luxury that, yeah, we couldn't even imagine some years ago. It feels like every time after you take a ride, you're getting punished a little bit because of the price every time around. Today, this morning, I picked a van, sort of cargo type car from, let's say, one of your friendly competitors. Mm-hmm. And to carry like a big cargo bike to a shop that needed to get repaired. So drive around, get this van, pick it off the street, drop it off again, 32 euros later in the app. Mm-hmm. Every time you take a vehicle, you basically get shown the price a lot. Your trip to take the cargo bike to the repair shop was like 32 euros. And in the original way of using vehicles as we know it, you basically have this pain only once. You make the decision to buy the car, that's it. Maybe like once a year again when you go for the inspection and have all the repairs. But it's like mental accounting, basically. It's just less painful to decide once and then not have to think about it for many months than to have it in front of you every time. Why don't we have more innovation in business models in pricing, for example? So could there be such a thing as a flat rate? And actually, as we're saying this, we know there's one sort of client of ours launching in Hamburg later this year that they are going to try out a flat rate for car sharing with a certain type of car. But do you think like there's more room there beyond technical innovation on pricing, business model innovation to get people to like really use all these offerings very freely instead of always feeling somehow bad about it every time?
First of all, what is really bringing the whole thing to the point is that most of the people don't know how much does my car cost per year. On the one hand, you have maybe your leasing rate or credit to pay or something like that, but you also have to change the tires. You have to sometimes do some service on the car. And I would say more than 95% of the people never put all the bills together and calculate how much does my car cost per kilometer, per minute during a full year. Yeah, means the transparency is not there. If the transparency would really be there and you have enough option to calculate that, you know, with ADAC, you can calculate for every car type what does it cost, yeah, to have that car. People would realize that the pricing they are paying today is a really decent one. It is really fair. It's really okay, because yeah, using cars is not cheap. Yeah, it's really not cheap. The second point about having a flat for using or in order to use some mobility offers, what we see is a growing business also with the mobility allowance, where we also see as a part of employee benefits companies offering this kind of mobility allowance in order to enable, I would say, the free usage of all the mobility options in a certain city. It's going in that direction, and it's also about being flexible and easy to use with all these offers and like using, I would say, a mobility option like car sharing or another type of mobility player. And yeah, I think we are going clearly in that kind of direction. Yeah?
If you're going in this direction of like a mass subscription, basically, then quickly comes to mind the role of cities behind that, who might, yeah, maybe today offer a public transport monthly ticket that could be extended to include other options. What's the importance of cities for your business success? I mean, I think regulation varies across Europe, which is now your focus, but do you see everybody moving kind of in a similar direction, or do you see some places that are basically off limits for you because of what the city does, and then others that are going very well because, again, of what the city does? Do they very much drive if a city will work well for you or not, or is that overrated?
We talked about Paris as one example of a close cooperation, close relationship with the city. But with most of the cities in our portfolio, there is a real intense cooperation between what we are doing, between our ideas and what's going on, I would say, with the planning of infrastructure, of the planning of how should the mobility be in the future in Madrid, even in Stuttgart or Berlin, Hamburg, and so on. What we need, if we want to enable, for example, car sharing in our specific case, yes, it's really, really painful if we see what we have to pay for parking in Berlin, for example. I think this is not a new topic. This is really something we do not understand. Every player in Berlin do not understand that situation. Yeah, what there is no more political support to facilitate our business in Berlin.
Can you put that to numbers, like roughly how much you're paying in Berlin? How does that compare to Hamburg, for example?
And in Hamburg, you have I will not go into the specific figures, but in Hamburg you have a flat rate, yeah. And okay. This flat rate was not from the beginning on, but it was a hand in hand, I would say, in a working group with the city. How can we facilitate the usage or the offering of car sharing in a city like Hamburg? What is a fair pricing? What is a decent pricing concerning parking space? And that was, I would say, a hand-in-hand development in a city like Hamburg. Also, the growing part of the electric infrastructure in Hamburg. Every car sharing player is putting more and more electric vehicle in their fleets in Hamburg. It's because the relationship with the city is really on a really high level. Yeah, to be very clear on that, there are cities where it's easier to develop alternative mobility offers and other cities where it's a little bit more challenging, I would say. But in general, I think there is no question about how relevant free-floating car sharing offer is for a city. We have a high usage in all these cities. And I think there is no enough, I would say, proof points in place to further push and enable free-floating car sharing and, in the future, free-floating electric car sharing.
Mm-hmm. One thing that stood out to me when I looked at your list of cities now is that they are the very well-known ones, the bigger cities in Europe that you're going after, and probably makes sense from kind of a density point of view at first. But do you see car sharing happening also in smaller cities? And if it's not done by you, do you see like a different type of companies or players doing it there, or even maybe a role for public transit operators in mid-sized cities to maybe support this or maybe license your technology and run it themselves? How do you think smaller cities where most Europeans basically live are going to have access to car sharing in the future?
Yeah, there's no restriction for the tech part of the business. There is no restriction concerning the size of the city. No? There is no relation between both. It's a question of potential. It's a question of how is indeed the population density, how high we see the potential, and how fast can you make a business profitable in the mid-sized cities. Yeah, we have some experience about that. We have been in mid-sized cities. We are still in mid-sized cities from our point of view. We know that it's a bigger challenge, but we are also open, as I mentioned, to offer our technology to smaller cities. We know altogether it's easy to be profitable in bigger cities. This is not a challenge anymore. Yeah, where our service is really highly relevant. If we're talking about Hamburg, Berlin, Munich, or Frankfurt, it's not, since years, it's not a challenge to be profitable in that kind of cities. But it's by far more challenging in a fully electric city. It's by far more challenging in mid-sized cities. This is the reality, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because the utilization is lower. The operational challenges are more challenging, especially with fully electric fleets. And I think all together, all the players, we have to find all the improvements possible to make it possible also to be profitable in fully electric cities and to be profitable in mid-sized cities. That is still a challenge, to be clear.
Mm. Super interesting. All right. A lot to learn from this session. Very interesting what you said towards the end. Actually, I mean, for you, it's like a given, but I think not everybody realizes when you said it's not a problem anymore to be profitable as car sharing in certain cities with enough density when there aren't like extreme restrictions like going all electric. But then you also said the focus on the car ecosystem, basically. For us, that still holds a lot of potential also as we think towards more longer-term rental and the application of AI is still driving down operations costs, but also your ability to match client demand. And this idea on the business model side that maybe since you own this technology, you also don't always have to be the operator. You could also be, and you already are in two cities, a franchise provider, basically. That's very, very interesting, kind of nuanced picture about ShareNow. Thanks a lot for spending this time with us, going onto this format. And we talked about it before we started recording here, that this is sort of the small brother of the Wunder Mobility Summit that we would have liked to do again also last fall and would have liked to invite you to the stage. Couldn't do because of Corona, but we are very committed to letting it run this fall. And I hope that you can make it and that we'll see each other in person there in Hamburg in the fall.
Yeah, it would be great. It was a pleasure, Gunnar.
Thanks a lot.
A pleasure. Thank you.